We've been searching for that time to get on some sort of a roll here to get that good feeling, and you need a game like this to give you a chance.
We're still struggling to try and score goals night in and night out, but we've been able to do that in the last couple games.
Jets have some life.
It doesn't get any easier as the season moves on. The road games get tougher and tougher. Oh,
there's not an easy answer to that.
Sankovic shoots! Scores! How about that?
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show with Ezra, Dave, and Drew on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca.
Ekman Larson near side is Perlini. That's a shot go and he scores. Preston Larson back out in front of shot. They score. Rebound out in front of shot. They score. And it's 3-1 Arizona.
And here comes Michael Hutchinson.
Last night in Arizona, the Winnipeg Jets dropping a 4-3 decision to the Coyotes. A score that flatters the team, flatters their performance after yet another horrendous performance by the Winnipeg Jets. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca, we welcome you to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mundell alongside Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com. Gentlemen, we obviously start with last night's game in Arizona, in Glendale. Jets coming in after the terrible performance Wednesday night at home against the Montreal Canadiens. The Coyotes coming off of their bye week. You know, one of the worst teams in the league, 29th place in the NHL entering last night's game, still in 29th place. Only 12 wins on the season entering last night's game. And the Winnipeg Jets somehow give up four first period goals after opening the scoring in the game. You saw, okay, Sean Matthias, he scores early. Maybe the message resonated after the performance Wednesday night against the Montreal Canadiens. But lo and behold, in a 10-minute time frame, the Jets give up four goals to the Arizona Coyotes. They're down 4-1 after 20 minutes, and pretty much everything else that happens in the rest of the game is meaningless as far as I'm concerned. That's a pathetic performance by the Winnipeg Jets.
Yeah, Drew, that first period in Arizona was absolutely unacceptable. And you mentioned, you know, that loss to the Montreal Canadiens on Wednesday night, 7-4, arguably the worst defeat that the Winnipeg Jets have had this season and maybe in the 6 years that the Jets have been back. But certainly, you know, Sean Matthias opens up the scoring on a really nice tip. You know, Toby Enstrom puts it on net and, you know, Sean Matthias continues to have a hot hand, but the rest of that first period, I thought, was a continuation of the way they played defensively in the game at home against Montreal. And, you know, Byfuglien's high, you know, too high in the zone. And, you know, Brendan Perlini breezes by Drew Stafford at the blue line. And, you know, Brendan Perlini, you know, good on him, you know, rookie player for the Arizona Coyotes, picks up a couple of goals. But I just don't think that they've been sharp defensively. And Connor Hellebuyck gets pulled for the second game in a row. He wasn't good. But I wouldn't blame this on Connor Hellebuyck. And, you know, give credit to Michael Hutchinson for coming into the game, and he only lets in one goal. I thought Michael Hutchinson was excellent in the second and third periods. But, again, they just haven't been sharp enough in their own zone. And it's not just the defensemen, Drew. It's the forwards as well. This team just doesn't seem to be prepared for these games. And it's shocking because the Jets had one of their best games of the season last week at home against Calgary, shutting a decent offensive team down. You know, Hellebuyck picks up the shutout, but the goaltending's got to be better. And just across the board, this team has to be more prepared for these games. Because the Arizona Coyotes, Drew, this year are an awful team. I mean, they might be the worst team in the league. Maybe the Colorado Avalanche are worse. And I'm not talking about record. I mean, you know, we know the records are bad for the Coyotes and the Avalanche. But these teams can win games. I mean, these teams are going to go out and compete. But the Jets had to win this game. They just had to. And now they're in a position where they have two more games on this road trip and they have to win both of those games or they're going to come back to Winnipeg and this is going to be another disappointing road trip, right? So I'm just very shocked at the way they came out. That game was over after the first period, Dave. You know, you go down 4-1, I don't care who you're playing. The game was over after one.
Brendan Perlini's liking playing Winnipeg-based teams. Had a hat trick against the Moose on Wednesday night, and then comes and plays the Winnipeg Jets and scores two goals. So he obviously had a nice game. The Jets, that first period, I was surprised. We were talking about it just before the show started, and I'm surprised the Jets came out the way they did. I mean, obviously, Sean Mathias scored. Interesting fact, Sean Mathias has scored the first, every one of his goals, I think he has six this season, has been the first goal of the game for the Jets, and I think five of the six times has been the first goal of the game overall for both teams.
Hey, you can win a bar bet there.
I'm just telling you, a little fun fact. So they you know, they came out, they got the goal, and you thought, okay, well, here the Jets are going to have the response they need. And then, as he's right, it was the defensive breakdowns. I mean, look, Hellebuck needs to make the saves. I mean, the Perlini shot beats him up high, which seems to be the book on Connor Hellebuck, is to go up high, glove hand on him. I mean, don't get me wrong, it was a nice shot, but, you know, he saw it, so you'd think that he should have been able to get to it. You know, defensively, I mean, there was the question of Enstrom, the interference when he got the knee, you know, kind of took him out of the play, and Arizona manages to score on that opportunity. But overall, you know, not a good 10 minutes of hockey by the Winnipeg Jets in a game that you needed. You know, I was calling it like an angry team versus a rested team. And you can't discount that. You know, like Arizona did have, you know, the break, which allows them to rest up, which is why I actually thought the Jets would be the more disciplined, kind of stronger team in that first period, and you wouldn't think that Arizona would be quote ready
because of the rust factor.
Yeah, the rust factor, and until the second period.
Hang on, you said, I mean, let me stop you there for a second, Dave. You said it's an angry team versus a rested team.
Yeah,
and you know, maybe going into the game, you can I understand where you can come out with that sentiment. Was there any anger in the Jets play at all last night? I mean, you have you can't go down 4-1 to the Arizona Coyotes. I don't and tell me that you have mentally prepared, that you have done the work necessary to be ready to play in an NHL game.
Well, I mean, again, do I like when I say angry versus rested? I did mean in terms of going into the game, not during the game. I'm talking about that's kind of what you were looking at in terms of both teams.
What you would have expected to see.
Right.
And then you saw nothing of the sort on the ice.
Well, again, the Jets had a good start. I mean, they
had a good 3 minutes. They scored the first goal, got the first five shots or so.
Sure. So, that's my whole point. So, they had a good start. And again, but the problem is defensive miscues is what led to the breakdowns for the Jets.
And you're right, Dave. I mean, on that second goal, I absolutely agree with Paul Maurice. Toby Enstrom was tripped there. I mean, that should have been a penalty. I think it was Jamie McGinn, if I'm not mistaken, trips up Toby Enstrom there at the blue line, and then it's a 3-on-2. So, I mean, on that second goal, that's just unfortunate. That's a missed call. Can't blame that on Connor Hellebuck. But again, I'm not going to blame this again. And I realize, you know, fans out there are all over the goaltending.
Go ahead.
That first play, again, go back and look at the replay. I was watching that game live. Dustin Byfuglien is way too high in the Coyotes zone. He puts himself out of position. And now Drew Stafford has to play defense. He's not a defenseman, Drew.
Mm-hmm.
And Brendan Perlini just goes right by Drew Stafford at the Jets' blue line. And, I mean, Brendan Perlini is a guy, he was a first-round draft pick. And, you know, he's a guy that can score goals. And, you know, it's a one-on-one now. You know, he's in the clear against Connor Hellebuck. It's a nice shot. I mean, again, you know, Connor Hellebuck, does he need to make more saves? Yes, he's been pulled two straight games. But I think that the Jets just haven't been sharp. And I think that is mentally sharp. And, you know, you're right, Drew. I mean, is this team realizing where they're at right now? I mean, we're 45 games into the season right now, and the Jets are right in the thick of the playoff spot. You know, you pick up a point here, a point there, you know, they're in a wild card spot. So, I mean, they're running out of time. And, you know, I'm not going to sit here and blame the goaltending or blame Paul Maurice. It's the players on the ice that have to get it done.
The players on the ice have to get it done. I agree with that statement. But the lack of discipline, the lack of preparation, the lack of professionalism that you saw from that team in that first period is a damning statement throughout the entire organization.
Well, I wouldn't go as far to say that, Drew.
It's been 6 years, guys. It's been 6 years.
Yeah, but this is a, I mean,
it's been 6 years, yeah, you're seeing the same nonsense.
Yeah, but you can't look at, you know, this season and then extrapolate that into six seasons. I mean, this is a very young team. It's a different team. I mean, this team is much different than the team 2 years ago, Drew, that made the playoffs. It's completely different.
The young players, I would argue, have been aren't the problem primarily. I mean, the goaltending, yes, so that's youth there. But, I mean, you know, if you're talking about the play of Ehlers, I mean, the young guys. I mean, Scheifele is, yes, he's young, but, I mean, he's a leader on this team. So it's a young man's league. We heard that all year long so far. So the youth excuse doesn't hold water anymore because there's no old teams in the league to speak of for the most part.
And I'm not saying that, you know, the reason why the Jets have been struggling as of late is youth. I'm just saying that this team is a lot different than the team 2 years ago, and it is younger. I mean, and it's just different players, right? So, I mean, this team has to learn how to win. We've seen them have varying degrees of success. But the Jets have been win one, lose two, win two, lose one, right? And that's been the Jekyll and Hyde nature of the Winnipeg Jets this year. So, I mean, this team is still trying to learn how to win. And, I mean, it's tough sledding right now. And you know, this team, I think, right now is vulnerable. And I think they're gripping their sticks pretty tight. And this is a team, if you look at the way the Jets reacted, Drew, last night, you know, once the Arizona Coyotes went up 2-1, it's almost like they you know,
folded,
threw the towel in.
Which tells me that there's a problem with leadership, that there's a problem with... There's problems that are more than just performance-based. When the first sign of adversity, the team folds like a cheap suit. That's what they did. You can't give up four first-period goals to the Arizona Coyotes and tell me that you have come to the rink prepared to play a 60-minute hockey game.
And that might be why they had the closed-door meeting. I wanted to play, I don't know if Rory has it queued up here, but I wanted to play Paul Maurice's comments.
You know, a closed-door meeting, a players-only meeting is, you know, item 101 in the big book of cliches of bad sports teams.
I'm just saying, Drew, well, first of all, I don't think you have closed-door meetings very often in the NHL. I think you maybe have, what, one or two a year?
I haven't had one in a long time.
Yeah, and I think the point is that I think they realize that, I mean, they got to turn this around because this team can still make the playoffs, but they're running out of time, in my opinion. So
they have now lost this year. The Jets have now lost to the Colorado Avalanche, the worst team in the league, the Arizona Coyotes, the second worst team in the league, the Detroit Red Wings, the third worst team in the league, the New York Islanders, the fourth worst team in the league, and twice to the Buffalo Sabres, the fifth worst team in the league.
Well, Drew, they've also beat the Blackhawks three times.
Right.
So that's exactly what we're talking about. That's the Jekyll and Hyde nature of this team. The Blackhawks are the best team in the West.
Yeah. And the Jets can play against them. So how can the Jets beat the Chicago Blackhawks and play up to the competition of the Chicago Blackhawks and then play down to the competition of the bottom feeding teams in this league if it's not an issue of leadership?
I don't think it's leadership. I don't think there is a simple answer. I don't have the answer. I don't know if anybody in the Jets organization has the answer.
If there's nobody in the Jets organization who has the answer, then we really got serious problems. But I mean, I'm not.
Blake Wheeler's a good leader. Mark,
I don't
Scheifele,
think it's the on ice leadership. I think the problems with this organization are now. It's 6 years, guys. It's not only on ice. It's now in the coach's dressing room. It's now in the front office. It's getting to the breaking point. 6 years. I mean, it's getting to a breaking point. And I don't like calling people out. That's not why I take no pleasure out of that. But at some point in time, there has to be accountability. And I have yet to see any accountability coming from anybody else other than the players. And that's a real problem. We'll come back. You have Paul Maurice? Okay, here's Paul Maurice before we go to break.
Coach, after you got the game's opening goal, what did you see them do better in that span of only about 5 minutes where they were able to get the four goals?
Well, better we had offensive zone possession and give up an odd man rush for a goal. The second one, I don't know, what do you want me to say to you about that one? Toby gets his feet kicked out from in front of him. It's a 4-on-3. It's in the back of the net. Third one, we're leaving the zone on. The fourth one's a shorthanded goal. So we gave up 14 chances in that game. And we gave up 7 of them in the first period, and we're going to have to find a way to get that to 10.
What did you like about your club in the final 40 minutes, and especially the push in the third?
Well, I don't think it was a whole lot different. It feels different, but we can be better, you know, in all the small areas of the game. But they never quit, you know. They Can we do better things? Sure. Can we get better performances individually out of people? Yeah. But they didn't quit. You know, they kept competing, kept fighting right to the very end, and that means a lot right now.
Rough outing for Connor. Hutchinson had a great game. How important was that to, I mean, you guys came within a goal at the end. How important was his performance for?
Yeah, it was important to come in and gain some confidence for him and for the team. He made some real good saves.
Yeah, room was closed for quite a while tonight. Did your leadership have some words?
I had a chat, yeah. You weren't looking for more on that, right?
No, of course I knew you're not going to tell me what they're going to say. Was that something that needed to happen in your view?
It's important. It's important that that happens. Because at the end of it, they're in this together. So it's important that they stay together. You know, you don't want an empty room. You can have a tough loss where your room gets empty. When you have a couple, you need that room to stay together.
1290, TSN1290.ca.
Hiring Paul Maurice is something that we feel very good about as far as the opportunity that we have to hire an experienced National Hockey League coach to come in here and certainly begin putting his stamp on the team and also on the evaluation process that we're all going to be going through moving forward.
That clip from 3 years ago, this past Thursday, the date Paul Maurice was hired as the Winnipeg Jets head coach. Happy anniversary, coach. You're in a bit of a tumultuous time with the Winnipeg Jets organization after last night's defeat to the Arizona Coyotes.
That means it's also roughly the three-year anniversary when Claude Noel was fired. So it's a bit of a questionable anniversary.
That's right. It's a bit of there's two sides to that coin. Certainly. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by the Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. For more information, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com.
Guys, maybe Claude's wearing his vest today.
Maybe he is. He's actually based out in sunny Arizona, so I wonder if he was there as a pro scout. He's, of course, scouting for the New Jersey Devils, and I know he does a lot of the West Coast games being based in Arizona. So who knows if he was there or not to watch last night's debacle. We'll touch on the 3 years of Paul Maurice's reign as Winnipeg Jets head coach. Quickly, though, guys, coming into, we have the Jets and the Kings later on tonight. That's a 9 o'clock puck drop. Can you go back? I mean, it's a back-to-back situation. Michael Hutchinson played the majority of that game for the Jets last night. Is he the starting goalie for the Kings game tonight?
Yeah, I think for me, I would be starting Michael Hutchinson. He only lets in one goal in relief. I think he made something like 25 saves in the two periods against the Arizona Coyotes. So I go back to Michael Hutchinson coming into last night's game. Connor Hellebuck had started 7 straight games, Drew. So I think it is time to go with Michael Hutchinson. Connor Hellebuck's been pulled the last couple games. So, let Hutchinson have some starts here. And he earned it, I think, with the way he played in the two periods against the Arizona Coyotes. So, I mean, we don't know yet who is going to be starting because there is no game day skate. But I wouldn't be surprised if Michael Hutchinson starts tonight in L.A.
Given the performance of Connor Hellebuck the last two nights, and I know this is going to sound crazy, but I would send him down to the Manitoba Moose right now just to let him rebuild his confidence for a little short period of time.
So you got to be very careful with that.
I'd be bringing up Andre Pavlik. And I know, look, from my perspective, and I know they're close to being in a playoff spot, but from my perspective, this is almost a lost year at this point in time.
And
Connor Hellebuck looks absolutely, you know who he looks like? The analogy, I would say, he looks like Chuck Knoblauch when Chuck Knoblauch couldn't throw the ball from second base to first base.
Drew, his numbers aren't that bad. He's like any young player in the league. I mean, the fact is, me personally, I think he maybe was rushed into this opportunity. But the fact of the matter is that, we were talking about it last night at the Moose game with someone, and we were talking with Peter, who covers the Moose with us for IllegalCurve.com. And he and I were talking about Carey Price and his ascension to the throne, if you will, in Montreal, and how long that took, and the opportunities that he first had in the AHL and then in the NHL, and how and he really didn't kind of come into his own until he was about 25 years old, and I'm just, the only thing I would caution is that Connor Hellebuck is a young goaltender to have assumed this mantle,
mm-hmm.
But the problem is I have a big concern by throwing him back into the AHL. especially because, you know, right now it's the idea is you're developing Eric Comrie into that in that spot in the AHL, and you really don't want to kind of mess with what his what he's doing down there, which is the development part, taking being the, you know, de facto number one goalie there. So and I'm kind of with Ez in terms of the, you know, the idea of confidence shattering it and that sort of idea. You know, again, you've given a lot of goaltenders in Winnipeg. Andrei Pavlik had the benefit of the doubt for so many years. Personally, and Coach Maurice has talked about this, goalies are the ones that we criticize. I mean, if you go through this team and you want to break down each single player, every single player on this team has made gaffes. The problem is when it's the goaltender, it is absolutely noticeable. And we sit there and we rip Connor Hellebuck for not making a glove save that he probably should have made, but we don't rip, you know, Dustin Byfuglien to the same degree by missing the block he should have had, or, you know, the check he should have had. So all I'm saying is I'm not suggesting that there's any less weight on Connor Hellebuck's shoulders. I just think like this is a collective team effort, and to put it solely on a goalie, I mean, to be honest with you, I don't know. I'm not a negative on Andrei Pavlik the way most people are. I mean, he's been fine with the Moose. But, I mean, I don't think he's your answer. I think that you've made a decision. This is what it comes down to. I think you've made the decision, and you have to live with it. And you have to live with the reality that you've made Connor Hellebuck your number one goaltender in the NHL, and you're not going to do him any good by sending him down to the AHL to, quote, work on his game. Because, to be honest with you, in a Canadian market where the focus is, like, amplified, it's not going to help him, because it's going to be like Twitter and this, you know, social media and people talking. And it just, I don't think he's, let's put it this way. If he was being sent to St. John's where he was out of the spotlight and nobody is talking to him and there's no media showing up and he can just, quote, work on his game, then maybe there's some benefit. But he's still in Winnipeg and he's got the same media, probably more now, who aren't showing up to Moose games but would show up if Connor Hellebuck's there. So now he's getting the same questions. He's getting a lot more, you know, it's not like he, like I said, he doesn't get what you want, which is the opportunity to, quote, work on his game.
Guys, are we still talking about this? I mean, the Jets have gone with Connor Hellebuck over Andrei Pavlik. Connor Hellebuck is not getting sent down to the AHL in favor of Andrei Pavlik. The only way Andrei Pavlik gets called up, in my opinion, is if there's an injury to Michael Hutchinson or Connor Hellebuck. I mean, are we going to still go down that road? I mean, everybody's dogpiling on Connor Hellebuck right now.
He's gotten
he had a shutout last week.
I know, but the last two games.
So when he gets a shutout, everybody's saying, oh, look how well Connor Hellebuck's playing. Look at how well Connor Hellebuck was playing leading up to that shutout. He was playing well. I'm not going to be here and throwing him under the bus. He hasn't played well. I mean, that's Captain Obvious here, Drew. He has not played well. I don't think it's fair to him to just blame him for these two losses. The team has not played well defensively. I talked about it on Thursday's show. I mean, you look at those goals. Some of those goals, Connor Hellebuck was just completely, you know, it wasn't his fault.
You're saying he was left out to dry.
He was left out to dry. I couldn't think of the words there. So, I mean, I don't think sending Connor Hellebuck down to the AHL is going to happen, and I don't think that is good for his development. So I mean, we've been talking about this all year. I mean, Connor Hellebuck is the goaltender that the Jets see as their future number one goaltender. Sending him down to the American Hockey League when he has a couple of bad games, I think, is short-sighted.
But if he continues to, if he gets, I don't know if he's going to play tonight or if he's going to play Monday in San Jose, but if he gets shelled there again, I mean, because that's what he's been. He's been shelled for the last two games. And he hasn't looked like he has any confidence right now. And Dave, you can speak to this better than I can because you've spoken a lot to him. You say that his number one probably attribute is an overwhelming sense of confidence. He's a very confident guy. You've said that when you covered him with the Moose.
Yeah. No, I mean, like, the fact is he doesn't reflect too much on these losses. Like, I mean, at least publicly, he's going to sit there and he's going to say, look, it's time. His attitude, I'm just repeating you what I've observed from Connor Hellebuck, is it's time that he goes over the tape with the coaching staff and then he moves on to the next game and he doesn't dwell on the losses, which is probably to his credit. You know, I mean, you need to be able to have kind of a short memory in some of these games, and that goes with wins or losses. Right. So, again, regardless of how I'm with Ez on this one, I don't think you can blame Connor Hellebuck he hasn't been great in some of these games. There's no question about it. Has he made the saves and maybe that's made the team a little tentative in front of him? Possibly. But, you know, because remember, if you recall last year, what did everybody talk about? how much better the team played in front of Connor Hellebuyck than they did Andre Pavlik, because they weren't worried that Andre Pavlik was in front of Connor Hellebuyck, that they would, quote, give up the weak goal. Like, Pavlik was, that was the kind of the narrative last year, and it may have been accurate, but that was the narrative. And now it's kind of switched onto Connor Hellebuck's shoulders that he's the one who's going to give up the weak goal. So again, has the Jets goaltending been good overall lately? No. Has the Jets team overall been good lately? No, they haven't. So, I mean, I just don't think that you can put all the blame on one player in this sort of I think that position is magnified because the buck stops there, or it doesn't. And if it doesn't stop there, then everybody's talking about it. So, again, like, you know, we're talking about the goal that Brendan Perlini scored on Connor Hellebuyck. But as he said, how does he get that opportunity? He's going one-on-one with Drew Stafford. Why is he going one-on-one with Drew Stafford? Because Dustin Byfuglien is way too high. Dustin Byfuglien's already leaving the zone. So, I mean, you know, let's talk about, like, the you know, not Hellebuyck specifically. The goal that, you know, Daniel scored against the Jets on Thursday. He walks right through, was it Byfuglien and Morrissey?
Yeah.
What, right through them. So, I mean, again, it's the totality. We can't be short-sighted and say it's one specific player. It's a team game, and you win and lose as a team. This is not like other sports. This is a collective effort. And I just, do I think that maybe Connor Hellebuyck should have had a little more time to be seasoned? Probably. That'd be my own personal opinion.
And again, Dave, if you're going to get all over the goaltending, well, you got to give Hutchinson props for making 21 saves in two periods. I mean, he kept that game close enough so that Blake Wheeler could score that goal in the third period to come back. And again, Drew, I realize the goaltending has not been good. I agree with you. It has not been good, and it arguably has not been good for maybe four of the six Jets seasons. Maybe five of the six Jets season, it has not been good. Maybe the exception is the year the Jets made the playoffs, and Andre Pavlik
went on the run at the end.
Was very good. I'm not disagreeing with you that the goaltending has not been good, but I'm not going to sit here and say that the goaltending is the reason why the Jets are where they are. I think it's a number of factors. I think it's the way they've played in their own zone. It's the way they've played as a collective defensively. I mean, the Jets are not having trouble scoring goals. The Jets have three players in the top 20 in scoring right now. Ehlers, Scheifele, and Laine. Wheeler, I think, might even be in the top 20 right now. So, I mean, it's the way they've played defensively. And again, Connor Hellebuyck's 23 years old. Is he having some growing pains? Yes. But I think sending him down to the American Hockey League when you've had him up with the NHL the whole year is not the right decision.
Now, when we come back, we'll talk about Paul Maurice and his 3 years as Winnipeg Jets head coach. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
On the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour is come and gone. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey, home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich, located in the Cordon Village Mall. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. If you're looking for a place to watch tonight's game, remember all the games on the Bernstein's Deli, big screens, full volume, great drink and food specials. Bernstein's Deli in the Cordon Village Mall, that's your place to be. Let's now talk about Paul Maurice. His 3 years as Winnipeg Jets head coach has come and gone this past Thursday, the 12th of January. That was the three-year anniversary of when he was hired after the Jets replaced Claude Noel. In his two full seasons and two partial seasons, him coming in 2013-14, partway through the year, and then only the 44 games so far this year. He's 243 games played. The Jets have 116 wins in those 243 games played. They have 127 losses. So 116 in the win column, 127 in the loss column for Paul Maurice. How would you sum up the 3 years now that Paul Maurice has been the Winnipeg Jets head coach?
Well, you know, you mentioned, Drew, that this is his third full season as head coach of the Winnipeg Jets. And, you know, the first season he comes in and he's only there for half of the season. And we've only played, you know, just over half of a season so far this year. But I think you have to break those seasons up individually. And when Paul Maurice takes over the Winnipeg Jets there for Claude Noel, I mean, the Winnipeg Jets were a complete mess. And it really isn't, I think, until the second year when Paul Maurice has a full season that you can really evaluate him. So for me, that first season, and by the way, that first season he came in and I believe the Jets won close to 60% of their games after he took over.
When he came in halfway through, yes. That season he came in, the Jets had 35 games left. They won 18 of them, they lost 12, and then they lost 5 in overtime. So you can say 18 wins, 17 losses in those the first 35 games.
Yeah, and Drew, when Paul Maurice took over from Claude Noel, it was immediate, the impact that he had. And, you know, we saw, you know, how he changed kind of the culture of this team and the way they practice. And, I mean, that second season, we remember the Jets made the playoffs. And I think, you know, that was, I think you would say, the greatest accomplishment so far for Paul Maurice is getting the Jets into the playoffs for the first time. And I realize they didn't win any games against the Anaheim Ducks in the first round. But that season, I think, is truly when the Jets took their first step forward as a franchise, making the playoffs. And remember, that year, Calgary also made the playoffs. Nobody expected either Calgary or Winnipeg to make the playoffs. So I really think Paul Maurice put his stamp on this team during that 2014-15 season. And then last year, obviously, was a huge disappointment. Now, we've talked about this for the last 2 years now. For me, the biggest issue I've had with the Winnipeg Jets over the last couple years, and this is nothing new, is the discipline issue and the special teams. And we've seen the power play be better as of late. Mm-hmm. You know, the Jets, you know, power play is now kind of middle of the pack in the NHL, but the penalty kill has still struggled. And at times, I think this team is still undisciplined. They're better than they were last year, but if you look at, you know, the penalties per game, the Jets are still, you know, I believe top five in the NHL right now. So that has been my biggest issue with the Jets. Now, Paul Maurice specifically, I think when Paul Maurice took over, there were a lot of problems. The Jets still had Evander Kane and Zach Bogosian.
The Jets have taken the second most minor penalties in the league this year.
So that, I mean, you could argue that it hasn't got better at all. And especially when you have a bottom five penalty kill in the NHL, that's a problem, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's not on Paul Maurice, but I mean, a lot of that has to do with Paul Maurice running the special teams. And I realize Charlie Huddy and Jamie Compon also run the special teams, but you know, Paul Maurice is the head coach. So I think, you know, he has to take at least partial blame for that, right? Now, when you look at the Winnipeg Jets over the last couple of years, I mean, last year the Jets were a disaster. And I mean, the best thing about last season was that they got the second overall pick. But you had the distraction of Dustin Byfuglien and Andrew Ladd and the fact that they weren't signed. And then Andrew Ladd getting traded. I mean, last year was a complete lost season. I mean, the goaltending was not good. That was Andre Pavlik's last year as a goaltender for the Winnipeg Jets. But, I mean, this year, I mean, you look at the way Josh Morrissey, for example, has played under Paul Maurice. You know, is that because Charlie Huddy's been also coaching him? Sure. But I think Paul Maurice deserves a lot of credit for that. I think Paul Maurice deserves a lot of credit for the way he's trusted some of the younger players, whether that's Nikolai Ehlers or Nick Petan. I mean, I think if you look at his 3 years as a head coach, there are ups and there are downs, Drew. I think there have been highs and lows. And I think, you know, sometimes it looks like this team is heading in the right direction, and other times it looks like they're not heading in the right direction. Right now, they don't look like they're heading in the right direction. After those two wins in Florida, they look like they were heading in the right direction. So it's very difficult for me, you know, to give a sweeping statement or a grade for Paul Maurice in his 3 years, because for me, it's incomplete. I don't think that this team is where he wants it to be. I don't think it's where Kevin Cheveldayoff wants it to be. It's a young team. I think they knew that there was going to be some, you know, ups and downs this year, but certainly they could have 5 or 6 points in the standings and be in a playoff spot, and then our outlook on Paul Maurice would be better. The league is so competitive right now, Drew, that you lose 2 or 3 games in a row and you go down 3 or 4 spots in the standings. So, you know, overall, I would give Paul Maurice maybe a B as far as him being the head coach of the Winnipeg Jets.
Dave, same question to you. Are the Jets further ahead now than when Paul Maurice was hired as head coach?
Well,
if so, how much further ahead are they?
Well, they are, but they are because their young players have blossomed into the players that they need them to be. So you've got Mark Scheifele, you know, a dominant center right now in the NHL. You've got Nikolai Ehlers as one of the, you know, top left wingers. You've got, you know, Nick, as just said, Nick Petan. You've got Josh Morrissey. So you have the young players who are coming into the lineup and taking spots away from older players that, you know, were kind of holding the spots. And that was the big concern. Now, right now, Paul Maurice's, like, winning percentage for the team is the same as it was last year. So, you know, it's ironic, you know, as just talked about timing and losing a couple of games. You know, the Jets had won 3 of the 4 games, you know, last week. Are we having a different you know, kind of tenor to our conversation about Paul Maurice than we are this week with, you know, two straight losses. Do I think Paul Maurice is like the answer? I don't know. I mean, Paul Maurice has 5 playoff appearances in his 18 NHL seasons. So, I mean, do I think he's a good NHL coach? I mean, he's good. Is he the greatest NHL coach? No, I don't think so by any stretch of the imagination. But, you know, he is the coach that they have currently. So, do I think the players have tuned him out? I don't. I actually don't think the players have tuned him out.
Well, if the players have tuned him out, then why did they come back in yesterday's game?
Oh, come on, Ez. They're playing against a team that, I mean, even if the Coyotes are a lousy hockey team.
I'm just saying.
They can't take anything in the comeback that they were down 4-1 after 20 minutes. They scored one goal with a minute and a half to go to make it a one-goal game. I'm not going to stand up and say, what a valiant effort by the Jets to come
back. What is your evidence
back?
That they've tuned them out? Their effort level? I mean, their effort level from game to game is different.
So
if their effort level is good, is it because of Paul Maurice? If their effort level is bad, is that because of Paul Maurice? You can't have it both ways.
No, the fact that they are so inconsistent, the fact that before the puck is dropped, you have no idea what you're going to get, and that you don't know if they're going, you know, what their identity is and what the purpose of their game is before, you know, you look at some teams, you know what they want to do on a night in, night out basis.
Drew, look at the Dallas Stars right now. Look at the Nashville Predators right now. Nashville was picked to win the division.
And they're having lousy years.
They have 2 more points than the Jets.
And they're having very bad years.
So, I mean, the Jets are 3 points out of a playoff spot right now. Where did we think this team was going to be? I don't think anybody picked the Jets to win the Central Division this year.
No.
So, I mean, you know, a few more points here, a few more points there. Look, the Jets are in a playoff spot, and then I just think right now, you know, people have to breathe, relax, and realize that right now the Jets still are in it. And, you know, as far as this whole talk about Paul Maurice's job, I think is ridiculous.
Well, okay.
I don't. If this continues,
so the question I have for you is: do you think that coaching would have the, like, if you have a different coach?
Yes.
Because you obviously are not a Paul Maurice guy, right? So
I think he's a very...
It doesn't matter what you think about him. I'm just saying, you don't think that he's getting the job done
on the
ice.
So that's fair.
The question I have for you is this.
Yes.
You
with a better head coach, with a different head coach?
Yeah.
If they had a, not necessarily a different head coach, but a better NHL head coach, a Bruce Boudreau, a Mike Babcock. I mean, Mike Babcock obviously wasn't coming to Winnipeg, but Bruce Boudreau was available and he went to Minnesota and he's done wonderful things
for
with the Minnesota Wild.
That nobody anticipated to do.
For a team that most people pegged would be on the downward trajectory,
right.
Bruce Boudreau has, and I know his record in the playoffs and everything else, but he's done a great job with the Minnesota Wild.
They also have Devan Dubnyk.
Yeah, they have great goaltending, absolutely, and that's a terrific benefit that the Minnesota Wild have that the Jets don't. Would a different head coach get more out of this team? I think the answer is yes. Do I know who that head coach is? No. Do I necessarily... I don't think Paul Maurice's job is in jeopardy this season, but after 6 years, which will be after this year, I do not know how Kevin Cheveldayoff, if the season continues as it's going, I do not know how he can justify to the fan base, i.e. they're paying customers, how they can bring back the status quo. And that goes for Kevin Cheveldayoff's performance as well, by the way. That's a difficult question as well that the Jets, that Mark Chipman should have to answer. You wouldn't go, Dave,
yeah,
and Ezzy, if there was a theater company and you had season tickets to a theater company, and for 6 straight years, they put on a good show, 1 every 5 performances, you'd cancel your tickets to that theater company.
Yeah, no, I mean, Drew, again, the reality is, I think Ez touched on it, is what were you anticipating from the Winnipeg Jets this season?
I didn't think they would make the playoffs, but I thought that you would be able to identify what they are as a hockey team and what their raison d'etre is as a hockey team.
I think you can. It's called consistently inconsistent. I mean, that's essentially what we've somewhat gotten from this team. But again, I don't think we're doing a letter grade, but I mean, I think the biggest concern for me is that if the special teams is where they are, how is it that you haven't championed a more disciplined approach from your squad, and guys are taking and it's veteran guys too, like Enstrom was in the box a number of times. I mean, that's the problem, is that the discipline to me Like, I think if you evaluate on the growth of players, I think we've seen Blake Wheeler emerge. And you can't attribute this to the coach specifically because, you know, the player has to want to develop. The player has to want to continue to get better. And you know, you can say whatever you want. Blake Wheeler is a guy who day in, day out, like,
He's
a hard worker, and he puts it all out there on the ice. There's no question about that. So you have guys like Wheeler, you know, who obviously he's taking it to the next level as he did last season. And his game is different. He doesn't have as many points this year, but he's done different things. You know, going to center, he's played with younger players. So Blake Wheeler, you know, Nikolai Ehlers is on a whole nother level this season, which is impressive. You've got Nick Petan, who we've seen growth in his game. Josh Morrissey, you've seen growth in his game.
Adam Lowry, Joel Armia.
Yeah, so there's no question that we're seeing growth. But again, it seems like for every step forward, you're taking a step back, and that's the problem, Drew. I think like that's where Maurice has to answer. Is why is it that when you have a team that doesn't have a great PK, are you taking a lot of penalties? You know, like that's just something you just can't be doing because, and again, it's not like these are necessary penalties. It's not like, okay, I slashed a stick to prevent a goal.
Yeah.
There are a lot of
chintzy.
Okay, well, they're I'm holding a guy up because my feet aren't moving. So, you know, that's the problem I have with his coaching is you know, is there a disconnect from the team? Like, why are they still doing those things that are putting them behind the eight ball?
Dave, if you don't play better defensively, you don't get better goaltending, you don't have a better penalty kill, you don't stay out of the box more, it doesn't matter who the coach is.
Yeah, he's right.
I don't know if there's a coach out there that would get 10 more points. And that was my point, Drew, that, you know, the Jets only have 3 overtime shootout losses. You look at the Calgary Flames right now, they've got 5 more points than the Jets. They've played the same amount of games. If the Jets take a couple more of those games to overtime, and we're talking about the way they play on the ice, not necessarily just the points, because the Jets are right in the playoff spot right now. Pardon me, right in the playoff hunt right now. I mean, Nashville and Dallas should have more points. I mean, you expect that at some point there's going to be a surge in the standings from at least one of those teams. They just have too much talent on the ice, right? But my point is, you know, they've just had so many games where they've blown leads or they've turned the puck over, and there's those little mistakes. But, you know, as far as Paul Maurice's tenure goes, it's really tough to say because I think the personnel on the ice has changed a lot.
Sure.
They've had injuries. The schedule was hard. And I realize that those are excuses, but I think when you have a young team like the Jets and you have a young goaltender and then you throw in all those injuries they had in November and the tough schedule, I mean, it's been a tough year for the Jets. And, you know, Paul Maurice, I'm not prepared at all to say that Paul Maurice's job should be in jeopardy. That's all I'm saying. I think, you know, you give him one more season with this team. He's got 1 year left on his contract. I don't think now is the time to let him go.
Okay. Well, agree to disagree, but it was a good conversation in any event. We've been fairly harsh, deservingly so, I think, through the first 45 minutes. When we come back, a little bit of a bright spot, Nikolai Ehlers. We'll evaluate his performance. Where does Nikolai Ehlers rank among the NHL's best left wingers? That's coming up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290.
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show returns. Now you're on the curve on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Ten minutes before the top of the hour, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Dave Manuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can reach us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve. That's the best way to reach us here in studio, at Illegal Curve. If we deem it worthwhile, maybe we'll even read it on air, what you have to say, at Illegal Curve. This segment brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. Nikolai Ehlers, gentlemen. A ray of sunshine in what has been an otherwise dark Winnipeg Jets season. Currently second in the NHL among forwards, among left-wing forwards, and sometimes it's hard to determine who's a left-winger and a right-winger because guys move around a little bit, but, you know, the guys who, for the most part, play the left wing, Artemi Panarin leads the NHL with 42 points, and then second over there, our own Winnipeg Jets, Nikolaj Ehlers, 39 points in 45 games. You know, and we'll try and do a sort of a combination of go team by team and evaluate Nikolaj Ehlers. But, you know, from your, to start, from your perspective, where do you see Nikolaj Ehlers among the top NHL left wingers?
Well, I think you could make the argument that right now Nikolaj Ehlers is a top 10 left winger in the NHL. And he's only 20 years old in his second season in the NHL. But you look at what he's doing right now, guys. He's on pace for 70 plus points this year. You know, he could easily hit 25 goals. He might even get to 30 if you consider that he was really struggling in the first 20 games. I think at the very least, you're talking about a top 20 left winger in the NHL. You just mentioned it, Drew. We're 45 games into the season, and he has the second most points among left wingers. And, I mean, when we're talking about left wingers, for me, Jamie Benn is the best left winger in the NHL. I mean, I don't know if Dave is going to disagree with that, but for me, it's Jamie Benn.
Over Ovechkin?
Yes. And I think Ovechkin is probably, I mean,
he's talking about overall. He's not talking about specifically just
well,
offense.
Well, I mean, and yes, I when you talk about the offensive side of the game, Alexander Ovechkin, you know, he's a goal scorer.
Yeah.
Jamie Benn can also set plays up more than Alexander Ovechkin. I think when you're talking about the top left wingers in the game, for me, it's Jamie Benn, Alexander Ovechkin, and Johnny Gaudreau. And, you know, Johnny Gaudreau isn't in the top five in scoring right now, but that's because he missed a lot of games, right? So I think he's played 35 games. So if he's played, you know, 10 more games, he's probably, you know, up there with Nikolaj Ehlers at 39 points. But certainly Nikolaj Ehlers, Drew, right now, he's the top left winger for the Winnipeg Jets. He's taken over that mantle after Andrew Ladd was traded. And when you look at his combination of speed and skill, it is world class. And I think that's why I wanted to do this segment, because Nikolaj Ehlers has arguably been the Jets' most consistent player. I think Blake Wheeler's in that conversation. And certainly when Patrick Laine was in the lineup, you know, he leads the team in goals. But I think it's between Ehlers and Wheeler for the most consistent players for the Jets. And, you know, Ehlers is on a 7-game point streak right now. It's incredible. So, I mean, can he get bigger? Can he get better defensively? Absolutely. But his body of work this year and last year is so impressive. And, you know, you talk about the sophomore slump. Well, Nikolaj Ehlers is having a sophomore surge. I just thought of that right now, by the way.
I believe it.
Did you copyright it?
Nope.
Well,
you might want to copyright it.
There's no question.
Copyright
that,
as he. Yeah.
But Dave,
patent pending.
Are you arguing with, you know, Nikolaj Ehlers saying that he's a top 10 left winger?
No, I don't think you can. I really don't. I think that and again, we're biased because we watch him, you know, almost not every day, but, you know, close to, and we see what he can do on a daily basis, which we don't see with other players. Well, Andrew,
to your point there, Dave, I think I mentioned it on last week's show that I'm surprised that Nikolaj Ehlers hasn't been getting more of the national attention.
I'm not.
And I know the team is struggling, and I know that Winnipeg's never the hot spot, but I do think that there's a story that a little bit that the quote unquote national hockey world, the national hockey media are missing, and it is about Nikolaj Ehlers.
I don't disagree with that at all, Drew. In fact, the funny thing is that Laine is a sexy topic because he's the super rookie coming in with all the goals. So that's something everybody, and obviously him versus Matthews. So that gets the national media attention and their juices flowing. Mark Scheifele, you know, that center who's kind of risen to the top of the pile. So that's also the kind of the next big topic. But
Dave, what about the fact that Nikolaj Ehlers has the chance to be the best hockey player to ever come out of Denmark?
Oh, you know, like I said, if you ask any of us, I mean, like I've been talking about Nikolaj Ehlers the entire season. I just can't get over what he is able to do, what he can do with his speed, what he can do with his vision. And again, there, you know, there's been a lot of good articles in terms of his advanced stats and how they've improved. And it's really is impressive. Like if you look at the metrics, you know, like where he's shooting from. He's shooting, like, his numbers have gone up, right? So it just goes to show you his hockey IQ. He's turned it up a notch where he's now realizing, okay, before he was shooting a lot more, his shooting percentage last year, I think, was like 9.7%, which is okay. It was about the league average. This year, as we talked about a couple weeks ago, it's like 13.7%, which, you know, it shows that he's obviously, his scoring percentage, but, like, he's shooting from better spots. And, again, if you look at some of the metrics, like where he's shooting from, they're all improved. Like, I'm just looking at it right now. Shot attempts, better. Passes in the slot, better. Passes off the rush, better. Controlled entries, which were off the chart anyways, are better. So, like, every area, I mean, and that's the thing you want to be able to look at a player and measurably say, how is he improved? And when you can look at a player and say, well, look at this. There's seven categories I've listed off, and he's consistently increased his totals. And look, yes, there's no question playing with guys like Mark Scheifele, actually Patrick Laine, by an advanced stats perspective, kind of brings down that line. But when he's playing with, when he was playing with Blake Wheeler and Mark Scheifele, or you know, even Drew Stafford and Scheifele, like, the fact is Nikolaj Ehlers is a player who's helping his team out. He's controlling the puck. His, you know, he's got a very good Corsi. Fenwick, all, it really is just, it's in, remarkable that we're talking about a second-year player.
Yep.
I mean, it's historic in the sense that sophomore slump is a term we hear so much, and there's a reason for it, because generally the NHL catches up to these players after their rookie season when they come in with all that gusto, and now teams have a book on you, and they say, okay, this is how to play this player.
Right.
And to show the growth in your game, to say, well, that's great that you're now defending me this way, because I'm going to modify my game, get better, and now you're going to have to defend me that way. It's impressive. And again, like I said, I look at Nikolaj Ehlers, and I think the sky's the limit for this player.
In the second hour, we'll really break this down and go, you know, is he better than X, Y, and Z? His ceiling. I mean, right now, you know, this is a guy who's averaging just under a point a game. He's at 0.87. He's got, you know, 39 points in 45 games.
Well, I think his ceiling.
Extrapolate that out, you know, so let's say it's 70 points.
I think his ceiling could be 90 points.
So you
his ceiling could be 100 points. I mean, he's 20 years old. Dave just mentioned this. I mean, he's in his second year in the NHL, and he's already on pace for 70, 75 points. And, you know, we know that forwards can have their best seasons between 20 and 25 years old, 22 and 25 years old. So I think absolutely. I mean, Nikolaj Ehlers, when he is flying, and he might have the best hands on the team, and that includes Patrick Laine. Ehlers might be the most skilled player on the Jets, and that includes some pretty skilled players like Laine, Scheifele, and Wheeler. I mean, he's pretty hard to stop. And Dave mentions his hockey IQ. Nikolaj Ehlers is one of the smartest offensive players I've ever seen. Certainly, you know, since I've started watching the Jets when they've been back. It's incredible what he can do. And the fact that we're talking about him as a top 10 left winger, you know, maybe we can get some action on Twitter as well, Drew. I mean, are we a little bit biased being in Winnipeg? Sure. But you, look at the stats. He's got the second most points amongst left wingers. And sure, you know, Johnny Gaudreau and Jamie Benn, you know, are better left wingers than he is, in my opinion.
And they've both missed time this year.
But they've both missed time. So, yeah. But the point is that he is having an incredible season. And I agree with you. I don't think it's being talked about enough. Is it because Patrick Laine is overshadowing him a bit? I mean, that's up for debate. But certainly I think Nikolaj Ehlers should be talked about more as an elite scorer in the NHL.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to talk about another elite scorer. That's Alex Ovechkin. He reached 1,000 points. Chuck Gormley covered Alex Ovechkin's career in Washington for many years. We talk to Chuck next about the Capitals, about the Flyers, about the Eastern Conference. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Hour number two coming up next on TSN 1290.
The Curve on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel. The man on my far left is Dave Minuk. The man in between us is Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Jets and Moose news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend Chuck Gormley. Chuck is an NHL insider with the NHL Network. Chuck, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm great. How about yourself?
Doing very well, Chuck. Thanks very much for joining us on this Saturday morning. I brought you on, you know, talk a little bit about the Eastern Conference, but I want to start with an individual you know very well from your time covering the Washington Capitals. That's Alex Ovechkin, of course. We were just talking about sort of the top left wingers in the game, and Ovechkin has held that role for a long time now. He reached 1,000 points in his career earlier this week. having covered Ovechkin up close, having seen him, day in and day out for so many years, what do you most appreciate about Alex Ovechkin that those of us who only catch him on TV or only catch him when he comes through town once or twice a year don't necessarily get to see?
Two things stand out to me. One is his enthusiasm and his love of the game. I mean, that's very clear whenever you see him score a goal, whenever you see a teammate scores a goal. But the other thing that stands out to me is his willingness to put in the work away from the rink. I think a lot of people kind of form the opinion of Alex Ovechkin that he didn't work real hard on the ice defensively. He didn't get back into his defensive zone to play defense. And the one thing I recognize with him is that when he's on the ice at practice, he'll stay after practice and just fire away with that one-timer. That is not just a natural gift, although it is, and very few people can crank a shot like he can. I think the work that he puts in afterward on his accuracy, when you have a one-timer like that and it's coming at you at 100 miles an hour and it's fluttering, the puck is fluttering the way it does off of his stick, that doesn't just happen. I mean, the accuracy that he has is because of the work that he puts in after practice where he's just bombing away one-timers. And I've seen it where his teammates just gather around and they just watch because it's almost like watching Babe Ruth take batting practice. I mean, it's an amazing thing to see. And I think that's something that's probably underappreciated, the kind of work that he puts in and the defensive responsibility that he's shown under Barry Trotz the past few years.
Chuck, I don't know if it's because the Columbus Blue Jackets just had a 16-game winning streak, but why aren't more people talking about the Washington Capitals' 8-game winning streak and the fact that Braden Holtby's already got 6 shutouts?
I think one reason is because the Columbus Blue Jackets, because the Philadelphia Flyers went on a 10-game run, because the Minnesota Wild went on a run, the Pittsburgh Penguins went on a run, and I think under the radar has been the Capitals. And maybe it's one of those situations where last year they were so good and they ran away with everything at such an early part of the season, and they haven't done what everyone has expected them to do in the playoffs, that maybe people have written them off a bit. I'm interested to see. I think it's exactly where they want to be in terms of not being the team kind of like the Chicago Blackhawks, you know, where everybody's gunning for you every night. Maybe there's a little bit less of that this year. Maybe the expectation bar went down a little bit. And I was talking with Barry Trotz about this a few weeks ago, and he was kind of describing their season. And he was standing against a cinder block wall, and he put his hand up probably around his eyeballs and said, "This is where we were last year." And then he lowered it about 6 inches, and he said, "This is where we are this year." But the difference is that he thinks that there's more room to increase their level of play, whereas last year they played at such a high level for so long, it was hard to sustain that, and we saw that team at the end of the season struggling to get wins, and you could kind of see that momentum had died, and by the time they saw the Pittsburgh Penguins, they were playing at a different level. The Penguins were rising, the Capitals were kind of in even keel, and the difference was just that victory for the Penguins, and it propelled them to the Stanley Cup.
Chuck, you know, a lot of us here in Manitoba know Barry Trotz quite well and are very familiar with his work. Do you think that this is the year, though, that he has to get this Capitals team through to that next level?
That's a good question. That's a really good question because, like you said, he is never, it's overlooked. I mean, all those wins that he has, he's never gotten past the second round of the playoffs. And I think that is something that the Capitals need to do. It's something that Barry Trotz needs to do personally. Do I think that if he doesn't do it, they make a change? That's a great question. I don't have the answer to that because I think that he has done so many great things with this team. I saw this team before him, and I'm seeing them after he's arrived, and this is a much better team all around. Their defense is incredible. The difference between when he took over and now in that defense is amazing to me. So, yes, Braden Holtby has a lot to do with it. That team is built to win now, and I think if they don't get past the second round this year, in fact, if they don't get to the Stanley Cup Finals, it would be a disappointment. So it's hard to say that it would cost him his job. I don't see that as something that could happen, but the pressure is certainly on that team and it will rise as the season unfolds. They might be under the radar now, but I think in the playoffs, the anticipation and the pressure in Washington will be just as great as it has been in the past.
Chuck Gormley, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Chuck is an NHL insider for the NHL Network. Chuck, speaking of the playoffs, and Dave asked about the Washington Capitals, under the new format, the Metropolitan Division for this upcoming playoff is going, I mean, to call it a beast is almost understating just how difficult it's going to be. Do the Montreal Canadiens, who are, from my perspective, clearly the best team in the Atlantic Division, are they sitting back and sort of evaluating what's going to happen out of the Metropolitan Division and saying, boy, do we have an advantageous path to getting to the Eastern Conference Finals and maybe the Stanley Cup Finals?
Yeah, in fact, I'm not crazy about the format. I mean, I'm all for division rivalries, but I think that they're already ingrained. I don't think you need to continue to build those. I think those rivalries are there. And last season, you saw arguably the two best teams in the Eastern Conference facing off in the second round in Pittsburgh and Washington. And I don't really agree with that. So, yeah, I think if Montreal can get to the conference final, I think that you're looking at teams that will be beating up on each other, whether it's Philly and the Rangers or Pittsburgh and Washington. You're going to see a team that's been beat up a little bit. And I'd rather see the two best teams in the Eastern Conference face off with each other in the final. So it's interesting because we've seen it time after time where a top seed gets knocked out. But in this case, I see Washington, the Rangers, and Pittsburgh being the three best teams in that division. And I think whoever represents that division in the conference final will, I'm hoping it is against Montreal because I think that would be a tremendous Eastern Conference final. As we know, some of those conference finals are better than the finals themselves.
Chuck, you had a great tweet earlier in the week on Tuesday when the All-Star Game rosters were announced. I had a bit of a chuckle there, and you should definitely follow Chuck, by the way, Chuck Gormley, NHL. You had the NHL All-Snub team, the NHL All-Star All-Snub team, with Artemi Panarin on there, Cam Atkinson, Voracek, Phil Kessel, Michael Grabner, Max Pacioretty, and David Pastrnak. Of those players, which one to you was the biggest snub?
I think Pacioretty. I really think that guy has been their best offensive player, best forward. And I understand, Shea Weber's got to get in there and Carey Price has to get in there. But I like Max Pacioretty. I think what he's done with that team and I think Carey Price, if he's healthy last year, it's a completely different story. But I think he was the guy that got snubbed the most. And you have to look at goaltending in Edmonton, too. I mean, where is that team without that goaltending? So, I think that you're going to have snubs every year. And I don't know if every team should be represented in the All-Star game. I guess you should. I mean, it is good for the fans of those cities to see that. But, I think you can find snubs every year. Panarin, obviously, having a great season. But, the guys that miss out, the older guys, they don't mind. I mean, they'll get a couple days when in the sun. They don't mind missing those. But the young guys, look at Wayne Simmons. This is his first chance to do this, and it's in L.A. where he started his career. So it'll be a fun weekend, and I'm happy for the guys that get a chance to do that for the first time.
Chuck, the Flyers reeled off 10 straight wins, and then they've hit a bit of a snag of late. And you tweeted about how no team has won 10 games in a row and then missed the playoffs. What do you think's up with the Flyers team that's made them, so good and now a little bit inconsistent?
Well, I think you're seeing some mistakes in the defensive end. You're seeing very sloppy breakouts. And I think the NHL, you guys know this, if you can break out of your own zone, you're going to be a good team. And I think, there are a few defensemen coming in and out of that lineup. They have a couple of young guys that they rely really heavily on, and Shane Gostisbehere and Ivan Provorov. And Provorov, to me, is going to be a number one. I think he's leading the defense in ice time, probably up around 21, 22 minutes a night. So it's a lot to put on a 19-year-old kid, and I think that's a big reason for it. I mean, they have some horses up front, and they can score goals as well as anybody in the league, but they're also allowing more goals than anybody in the league. So I think if you look at that, and Steve Mason has been okay, but he needs to be better than okay with the defense that he has in front of him. So I think that this team is going to struggle. I think it's going to be a dogfight to get in. Like, you see Toronto playing better. So I think Tampa, we haven't seen the last of them. I'm surprised that they haven't gone on a run yet, but I would imagine that we'll still hear from them before the season's done. So I think it'll be tough for the Flyers to hold on to that spot, and they're going to need to get playing a little bit better in their own end if they want to get into the playoff and do any kind of damage.
Now, Chuck, I asked you about why nobody's talking about the Washington Capitals' 8-game winning streak. At least I'm not hearing enough talk about that. What about the Carolina Hurricanes? They've won 3 in a row. They beat the Buffalo Sabres 5-2 yesterday. They're in the playoff race right now. Are they the team that nobody seems to want to talk about?
Absolutely. You know, it's funny. I was having a conversation with Chris Therrien about this the other day. He said, I think Carolina is a team that you have to watch out for, and I agree with him. You know, you're seeing Cam Ward playing a little bit better. That they've got the horses, especially on the back end. That team has a lot of depth on the blue line, and I wouldn't be surprised to see them maybe deal one of those depth defensemen, and they've got a couple guys coming up in the organization that they could go out and get a forward. And if they do, I don't know, maybe a Martin Hansel would be a good fit there. They could do something and get into the playoffs. And we see this every year. The team that is really playing well down the stretch has the best chance of upsetting another team in the first round, and that could be a team that does it.
Chuck, we'll let you go on this last question. You look at the two Florida teams, and last year they were so good. Both of them were playoff teams and huge expectations coming into this season. Panthers have already made a coaching change. The Lightning are 2 points even behind the Panthers. You know, it's past the halfway point of the season. Time is beginning to run short. What's it going to take for either the Panthers or the Lightning to begin to turn this thing around and get back into the playoff race?
That's another great question. I think when Gerard Gallant was let go and Tom Rowe took over, the question was, how are the players going to react in Florida? And I think for the most part, I mean, they struggled early, but they've stayed in the hunt. And I thought the opposite might be true. I thought you might see some players saying, okay, we really like Gerard Gallant. What's it worth? And you're seeing that team starting to put things together. Roberto Luongo has the opportunity to do something with this team, and he's getting late in his career. So I didn't think 3 weeks ago or 4 weeks ago that Florida would have a better chance than Tampa to get in. But I think now I'm seeing two different things. I thought Tampa, like I said, would go on a run by now. John Cooper's got to be scratching his head. I mean, they've had so many injuries. I think I saw that 33 different players have suited up for the Tampa Bay Lightning, and that's not good for any coach. So they've got to get healthy. Obviously, they need Steven Stamkos. The question is, will they get him too late? Will he be, you know, will this team be still in the hunt when he comes back in March or so? So, yeah, right now I'm surprised to say that the Panthers might be the team that might be more dangerous than Tampa right now.
Chuck Gormley is an NHL insider on the NHL Network. He's a good friend of this program. Chuck, appreciate your time. Thanks very much for joining us this morning.
My pleasure, guys.
Okay, do it again soon, Chuck. Take care. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll continue our discussion and evaluation of Nikolaj Ehlers. Still to come on the program at the bottom of the hour, Kevin Kurz of CSN Bay Area on the San Jose Sharks. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're on the Curve on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Cross ice pass, Ehlers tees it up, scores! Nikolaj Ehlers off the bar and in, and he has his first NHL goal, and it comes on the power play.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 20 minutes past the top of the hour. Still to come, we'll talk to Kevin Kurz about the San Jose Sharks, Jim Fox about the LA Kings, and Ted Wyman of the Winnipeg Sun joins us in the last hour. This segment of the program brought to you by our good friends at Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys are known as one of the world's best jersey customizers. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want personalized, visit Keener Jerseys online at KeenerJerseys.com. www.thelegalcurve.com. Check out their new showroom, 982 Portage Avenue. That's the corner of Portage and Sherburn. Tell them Legal Curve sent you. Keener jerseys, where craftsmanship and attention to detail makes all the difference.
I really like those new all-star jerseys, by the way.
They're what, gold, black, purple. Silver, and purple or something?
Yep. Yeah. Okay. I don't love them.
Yeah, Lion A is going to wear the purple jersey.
Yeah, the Central Division's the purple one. Is that it? Yeah. Yep. I mean,
I like them.
Whatever. The all-star game will happen. If an all-star game happens and you don't watch it, does it actually happen?
It's for the children, Drew. I tell you, every year. Well, then for the kids.
Then let the kids find a way to pay $350 to attend it.
Well, no, that's where mommy and daddy pay for that.
Oh, okay. So it's for the kids, but really it's for the pocketbooks of the owners.
I mean, I think every year when Richie was back on the show, I always was more into the All-Star game than you guys were.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, I really like the skills competition. And, you know, this year I talked about it on Thursday's show. It's an opportunity for Patrick Laine, we hope, to display his skills. So, I mean, it's fun. And again, guys, we should look at the All-Star game as fun. Let's not take it too seriously.
The All-Star game for me is an opportunity for me not to have to worry about, not have to pay attention to the world of hockey for about 4 days.
And
that's
we have
what
the annual Illegal Curve Shinny Classic.
What was that text message yesterday?
What do you mean? It's to play outdoor hockey.
Like, you had to book an outdoor hockey game 3 weeks in advance?
You know, as he likes to be prepared.
Well,
you
so
know?
To give, okay, Drew, don't play then.
I won't.
You're banned.
I'm out.
Sorry for inviting you to
it
go play outdoor hockey.
It was just a pretty random text message to get on like a Friday morning.
We've done it every year.
Fine, I'm not disputing
you know,
that we've
funny.
Done
it's
it.
It's funny that a it's guy just like, who's got responsibility
so what,
like
would
you, Drew.
Would you not like me to invite you?
I certainly appreciate being invited.
How's it random?
It was just a bit of a random email to say, to get a text message on Friday morning at like 9:15. Like, hey, book in your calendar to play shinny 3 weeks
that
from now.
I think it's weird that a guy who is regimented, meaning you know you have a child that you have to look after, that would not like to know well in advance that there's going to be a game in 3 weeks, so you can plan your schedule accordingly.
I appreciate that letting me know. It's unlikely I'm going to be able to play because you know I do the show for 3 hours, and then I'm like, hey, Laura, you got to go play hockey now. See you again in like another 3 hours.
Well, the Illegal Curve shinny will never be the same without Drew Mandel, but I think it will go on.
I think you guys can, without me, you can replace the N in shinny with two T's instead, something like that. Okay, Nikolaj Ehlers. So we were talking about his ceiling and his trajectory a couple segments ago. You know, if you look around the league, and we're not going to go team by team, but if you look around the NHL, like, which guys jump to mind as clearly still being ahead of Nikolaj Ehlers among left wingers in the NHL?
Yeah, we talked about it earlier. As far as I'm concerned, Jamie Benn's the best left winger in the NHL. And when you're talking about other left wingers, I think you got to throw in Alexander Ovechkin as well. I would throw Rick Nash in there, Artemi Panarin, Johnny Gaudreau. I think you can make the argument, Drew, and I don't think it matters whether you put Nikolaj Ehlers at number 7 or number 8 or number 9 or number 14. I think the point is that Nikolaj Ehlers has emerged and he's in that conversation for a top 10 left winger or top 15 left winger. So,
would you put a guy like Taylor Hall? We talked about Taylor Hall.
Yeah, I would
put
Taylor Hall ahead of Nikolaj Ehlers.
You would still put Taylor Hall ahead of him?
Yeah. And I mean, Nikolaj Ehlers is getting to that point where he can be in that conversation, you know, as far as being better than a Taylor Hall or a Johnny Gaudreau. But certainly for me, there are not that many players that I would put ahead of Nikolaj Ehlers. I mean, Ovechkin, you're talking about a future Hall of Famer. No. Jamie Benn, you might be talking about a future Hall of Famer already, but certainly those guys are at a different level than Nikolaj Ehlers, but there aren't that many players, and we talked about it. Right now, he's second amongst all left wingers in scoring. It's incredible.
Well, that's why, I mean, sorry, Dave, I'll let you get in there, but that's why I was asking about Taylor Hall. You know, I'm like, you know,
Taylor Hall missed some games too, so.
Right.
So if Taylor Hall doesn't miss those games, he's probably closer to Nikolaj Ehlers.
He's played
right?
11 less games than Ehlers. Yeah. I think Taylor Hall is still a better left winger than Nikolaj Ehlers. But the fact of the matter is that Nikolaj Ehlers is in the conversation. And Nikolaj Ehlers is in his second year and in the conversation with, is he as good as Taylor Hall?
Yeah, and another guy, Dave, I'd put ahead of Nikolaj Ehlers right now, and we just saw him in Winnipeg, is Max Pacioretty. And it's not just points-wise.
Yeah, you're talking
Max
about
Max Pacioretty is one of the best defensive forwards in the game. So, I mean, Pacioretty is ahead of him. I mean, when you're talking about some of the other elite left wingers, you know, Jeff Skinner.
Would you put Jeff Skinner? I mean, Jeff Skinner's having a good year, but I
Brandon Saad, you know, Jonathan Drouin. I mean, Milan Lucic is not somebody who I would put above Nikolaj Ehlers. I think
You would put Ehlers above Lucic.
Yeah, and Nikolaj Ehlers, I think, is going to fall somewhere between 10 to 15 for me. I don't know exactly where he fits in, but for me he'd be really close to the top 10.
Yeah, I'm with Ez. I actually think he's within the top 10 for me of left wingers in the NHL. Just because, like I said, I just don't see – I see his trajectory just continuing to go up. I see a player who's adapting to the NHL game every single day, getting better, doing the things that he needs to do, working hard on his game. And again, that doesn't mean that Nikolaj Ehlers' game is perfect. There's things that need to be changed. There's some improvements he needs to make. But again, that comes with growth of a young player. But just seeing him make those adjustments and getting into the shooting lanes and getting into the right spot and taking the shots from the more dangerous, you know, position on the ice, you know, to me, just goes to show what he's been able to do this season. And for my money, he's probably one of the most exciting players that we get to watch in the MTS Center on a nightly basis. So, you know, again, Panarin is still probably better. Marchand, for his overall game.
Well, Marchand had 40 goals last year also.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So, like,
Marchand is another guy that
Like Brad Marchand is a guy.
You can't put Ehlers ahead of Marchand.
No. So, I mean, you got Ovechkin, you got Pacioretty, Ben. But then after that, like, really, I mean, Taylor Hall, Nikolaj Ehlers is getting into that conversation. I'm sorry. Like, and again, we're biased because we see him so much and we see what he does. And we don't necessarily see what, you know, Johnny Gaudreau or Jonathan Drouin or, you know, Brandon Saad. Those guys are doing on an – especially a Brandon Saad, who's a very good player, but he's, you know, he's out east, so we don't see him that much. But you know what I mean? So we don't get to see these players, whereas we see Nikolaj Ehlers. And again, I watch him in practice and I think to myself, like, this guy is – and it's – you know what it is? It's the speed. Because you got to remember, guys – guys can do stuff with the puck and they're doing it, you know, at a slower pace. But you see the decisions he's making and he's doing it at a high level of speed. And it really just doesn't adjust. It doesn't look like he has to slow down his game. So, again, you know, sometimes he leaves himself open. You get worried that he's going to get killed one day. But at the same time, like I said, I just don't see a ceiling with this player right now. So do I think we'll see him in a top five left winger role and eventually getting more media notoriety that he should be getting? Yes, absolutely. I don't think there's any question in my mind.
And Dave, wait till he rounds out his game. I mean, Nikolaj Ehlers, I'm not saying that, you know, he isn't successful defensively as well, but I don't think we've seen that part of his game develop to where it can be. So wait till he's 23 or 24 years old, and we might be talking about him as maybe the second or third best left winger. Certainly, I mean, if anything, this exercise has shown that he is at the very least a top 15, top 20 winger in the NHL. And I mean, it's subjective.
I think closer to top 10, is he? I mean,
it's subjective. I mean, you could say he's the fifth best left winger. I could say he's the 17th best left winger.
Yeah.
So we don't have to have a final ranking. But I mean, the point is that this guy is on a trajectory to be a top left winger in the NHL. So, I mean, you're talking about guys like Daniel Sedin, who we'd be talking about in this conversation. But, you know, Daniel Sedin at 36 years old, I mean, Nikolaj Ehlers has surpassed him even at 20 years old. So, I mean, with the exception of Ben Ovechkin, Johnny Gaudreau, maybe Artemi Panarin, Brad Marchand, five or six players, Brandon Saad, I mean, with the exception of half a dozen guys, I mean, Nikolaj Ehlers is right in that conversation for top left wingers in the game.
And interestingly, I went back when I was doing some research for this segment, and I was looking at some articles that were ranking the top left wingers in the NHL.
And those were at the beginning of the year,
at the beginning of the year, yeah. So the beginning of the year, they said, who are the top 20 NHL left wingers?
Mm-hmm.
Guess whose name wasn't on that list?
Nikolaj Ehlers.
Nikolaj Ehlers.
Yeah.
So, that's not a shocker. You know, he was a rookie, had a good rookie season. But, you know, again, maybe
second
they are,
player.
You know, but then that's my whole point is that
Dave, his name will be on that list next year.
That's right. No question about it. Absolutely.
Yeah. And probably in the top 10, if not top 10, top 15 next year, assuming if the season continues on the same
trajectory. Yeah, and I think Ez is right. I mean, you know, there's people have their opinions, but I think it's a top 10, no question, next year.
The Jets go into San Jose on Monday afternoon to play the defending Western Conference champions. Kevin Kurz of CSN Bay Area joins us next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.